I am Daniel Lucas, and you are listening to Science 101, making science approachable, understandable, and relevant to everyday life. Another week, another great episode with my legendary co-host, Mr. Mark L. Christensen.
Hello. Hope the lighting's working out there.
Yes, indeed. How are you, partner?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing, Daniel?
Well, busy, busy always, but, well, we are on Science 101, so we will give you the best of the best topic that Mr. Mark will prepare for us.
Yeah, today's discussion is evolution, right?
Evolution,
we're going to talk about the evolution in a bigger picture, and how we all usually refer to evolution as just small parts, so that humanity came from primates and primates came from other animals, and it's a smaller picture. But to really understand the full spectrum of evolution, you got to know the whole thing. You got to be able to see the whole picture. So, to get a human being, that's the grounding way to really look at this. Like, how do you get a human being? You know, how are you going to whip one up? Well, it's easy. You need a lot of time because it's about dividing cells. So cells divide, human cells divide, and most cells divide in a 24-hour period. And they have to be around the body temperature of a human being, 89.9. And then you have proper cell division. That's how you have to set this up in order to get you and I, a human being. And then you need millions of years for those cells to divide to become what eventually would be a human being. So in the beginning of evolution, and we'll start with bacteria, bacteria evolved from what they're finding out now is the originating molecule is called LUCA. I forget what its abbreviation. The original molecule is what they're calling it. And from then you built enzymes and of course RNA and DNA and all of the structures that would build bacteria, because that's the foundation for everything. And they're, strangely enough, they're finding all of these elements of DNA and RNA building structures on asteroids. The two asteroids that we have gotten samples from have all of the building blocks of life on there. So I always want to start off with saying that how do you get bacteria to get humans is you just add water. See how simple it is? So anywhere in the universe, if you have a planet warm enough for water, not frozen ice and not overheated for a gas or condensation, but you have water, which means it's a certain temperature range in between 50 or 100 degrees, you're going to be able to ignite this molecule and start the RNA and DNA process for the structure of the beginning first cells, which is bacteria. And this is how evolution actually begins. This is what we know now for just recent stuff. So once you get bacteria, you have to evolve into a human being still. You know, and remember that bacteria is a cell that divides, and it needs 24 hours to do it and a certain temperature range. So if you can calculate that almost, like how many years it's going to take for this bacteria to be able to stand up and have the conversation like me and Daniel are having right now. It's going to take about, you know, 4 billion years. So for the first 2 billion years, you have bacteria feeding on one another until something comes around that is multicellular and larger to not get eaten by the other bacteria. One important factor to realize that everything that is a cell needs food, right, or energy. So in the beginning, when all there was rock, water, and bacteria, what were bacteria eating? other bacteria. That's all there was. Water, rock, and bacteria eating one another. So it evolved into a larger animal that was multicellular, and so that would stop the feeding frenzy on bacteria, and it became a larger animal. I'm going to call it fungus, because fungus is awesome and weird, and I'm going to call it the original fungus that was both plant and animal together. And not to get too complicated in that area, I'm just going to say that split into two pieces. The plant life went onto land, and the animal life part of the fungus went into the ocean. The animal life built the vertebrae. The land part of the fungus built forestry, and then eventually vegetables. So if you want a human being, you got to prepare for the landscape. It almost seems planned that the earth would take these next 2 billion years to develop the land and cultivate a feeding source. Remember, you have to eat and daily. So on the land, there's nothing for a long time until eventually the forestry and then vegetables. And in the water, there's the vertebrae is growing inside fish and animals. And then eventually you have an amphibious life form. There are probably one or two of them at the same time. But you can't have an amphibious life form if there's no food for them to eat once they're transitioning onto land. So it's kind of like a plan where the fungus had developed all the plant life on the surface of Earth, ready, kind of like a refrigerator, ready for whatever was going to come out of the water, and then learn how to walk on all fours. And then there's the reptilian period, which lasted for 200 million years, eventually just super large dinosaurs. And they're finding out that towards the end of the dinosaur era, there were possibly primates. And those primates survived the mass extinction of the asteroid that hit 65 million years ago. So let's just jump ahead. That all of this has evolved into the preparation for a human being. And don't forget, all these animals have to eat every day. And this energy comes from other animals, or other animals that have eaten from plant life, which came from the sun. So here's another way of looking at it. Every bit of energy that every animal eats and survives on daily came from the sun directly. It fed plant life, which fed primary consumers, and then that fed secondary consumers, and then that feeds us. So if you look at it in the big picture sense, this is kind of the recipe and the mechanics of how to get a human being. And you can kind of look at it like you could do that anywhere in the universe, as long as you have temperature, which is the same as water, and it's just an add water process. So once you have warm-blooded animals and then primates, one interesting factor or questions that I get is like, how did we get from ape to mankind? Because that's a big gap that we don't have any evidence on, some fossil evidence, but it's kind of a missing link. And the reason why is because they're thinking, and I'm thinking as well, that during the grasslands expansion in Africa, this is about 2 million years ago, when primates lived primarily in trees to save their lives, because if they ever were on the ground, they would get eaten by a lion or something else. They would never last long. That's why they had to live in the trees. They procreated in the trees. They ate in the trees. And that was how a primate lived, with a tail. There's no way you could live any other way. What happened was the earth started to warm up, and the jungles started to dissipate. And so this is a millions of years process, but eventually trees didn't grow new trees didn't grow, and then the trees got farther and farther apart as they died. So the families of primates that lived in these trees had to run across the ground from one tree to another. They couldn't swing from limb to limb anymore. And in that process of running from one tree to another, they lost the tail, because running, the tail interferes with running. So they're thinking that the farther apart the trees got, the more enforced running and walking became as these families tried to feed their families and the primate families in the trees. And eventually carrying their young while running from tree to tree. This is thousands of years process. We're eventually just going to have a full-time standing monkey, full-time. And then eventually the trees were gone. And this is where you get the migration of what we call the very first full-time upright primates. Australopithecus is the one that we refer to because we have their bones. And then this Homo erectus, eventually, where Homo erectus was fully erect, where the spine is carrying all the weight on its pelvis and then legs. And that's when the hands become more technical and the feet become more running. And this is a documented evolutionary process. And then eventually we come to a Neanderthal, which we all know about, and then Homo sapien. Homo sapien is who we are. We are the not the final, but we are the latest evolution of human in this process. And they're thinking that the reason why Homo sapien won over Neanderthal is because of communication. And this is really important to realize, that getting more information faster is safe. It's safety. It saves lives. So Neanderthal didn't have a way of verbalizing language faster and technical, because they're thinking that the larynx in Neanderthal wasn't evolved. It hadn't dropped, is what they think. So Homo sapien had a larynx dropped to the point where it can pronounce not only vowels, and if you think about it, A-E-I-O-U is kind of like ape talking. A-E-I-O-U. It's kind of like that's how an ape talks. So when Homo sapien evolved and their larynx dropped, they were able to say more complex vowels and consonants combined, delivering more information to other Homo sapiens, and that's how they were able to outnumber and outwin the poor Neanderthals. They just lost in information. And they're also thinking this is probably why Asians can't pronounce R's or L's, is they still have a slightly primitive location in their larynx, which is just, that's current evolution. If you look at all the animals on the planet today, some are more evolved than the others, and that would make sense. So that's why they're thinking that the Asians have a hard time pronouncing L's and R's, is because their tongue and their throat won't pronounce it. And that's how you get a human, basically. And you want to look at the big picture from bacteria to us today. That is the full bookends of evolution. And then there's a future perspective to that too. And you can tell what that would be like by the adaptation of this human animal to the future conditions. So I know it's a mouthful, and maybe there's something I missed, Daniel, or maybe you can help me explain that a little better. What do you think?
Yes, definitely, Mr. Mark. And my first question is, how has evolution shaped not only biological life, but also human intelligence, culture, and civilization over millions of years?
Yes, very, very good. Well, it goes hand in hand. You can't have one without the other, actually. So let's just say that we evolved to the point where we used sticks, and primates use sticks to this day. They use them to probe things, to protect themselves. So if you can imagine, if that was that ape today was going to be fully standing and never back down on all fours and holding that stick to protect itself constantly, the stick can get longer and more useful for its protection. And then eventually you'd want to, you know, I would think, because there's certain rocks that they use, because apes use rocks too, that there's certain rocks that cut your skin easy, like flint, right? Or some kind of volcanic glass. This stuff cuts really easy. So they learn that, and then they learn to put it on the end of that stick that they've been using for thousands of years. That became the very first protective weapon. And we still use those today, believe it or not. We have tribes that actually still use that same setup. Now, this is how technology starts. So you can't have a civilized environment without protecting it. And this spear with a piece of glass on it was the first way to actually be able to predict safety within a confined environment of a group of humans. And that means protect them from the animals that used to eat them, and also other humans that used to, rape and pillage for survival, basically. So you were able to draw a line in the sand around your group of people and protect them with this new device that's a deadly spear that is technology. So once you had that enclosed environment that is protected, now you have time to think, pontificate, and develop a food and delicacies, and also be able to cohabit and celebrate that time. You know, if you don't have time and you're always on the run and you're always protecting yourself, you don't have time to pontificate or celebrate any off time. So that spear and this community can now be called a civilization, because it's become more civilized in the sense that they're building arts and they're celebrating and they're becoming more spiritual. So you can tell that technology helps civilization grow into a civil culture. And it's been becoming more and more civil as time goes on. In fact, that's the gauging process, is that since then until today, it's always been more civilized. And when you focus on the tragedy of war in past history, it's hard to place that as a part of civilized life, but it is. It's making, once again, it's just a sharper spear, a more deadly spear. But what it's doing is it's making your territory more civilized so that you can have a civilization. And that, of course, is that spear turning into more technology. And we're seeing that in action today. We're watching that really unveil today in the Middle East.
Yes, we're still unveiling, right, Mr. Mark? So how does evolution challenge traditional views about human origins, purpose, and place in the universe?
Well, the place in the universe. Okay, so let's do talk about the future a little bit of evolution. So we've seen from bacteria to human. We know that is a reality. It's not just from ape to man, it's from bacteria all the way to human. And that's the big 4 billion year big picture. But the picture's not done. Okay, so let's just look at that bacteria has been adapting to all of the environmental changes up till today, and there's been plenty of them. In fact, when bacteria started, the planet was 250 degrees. It was just slowly beginning to cool down, and it's been cooling ever since. But eventually, the Earth is going to start heating up again. And it's not for thousands of years, but it probably is starting right now on such a minute scale that we're blaming it on humans. We're blaming global warming on pollution. And the reality is that human pollution is only responsible for about 15 or 20% of global warming. The sun, it's changing. And it was always meant to change. So if you can think of us evolving within a system, and we'll call it a solar system, right? Everything within that system is systematic to that system. So if our future is our sun starting to expand and getting a little hotter every year, every 100 years, every 1,000 years, we're going to see an increase in temperature, which us humans and all of life that support us humans, which is all the plants and animals. Today, you ate a plant and an animal. There's no doubt about it. You got your energy from those two sources. So it is us, right? Take the plants and animals away and we're gone. So literally all the plants and animals are us as well. So all of us are evolving daily to adapt to a new environment. And on Earth, we are slowly starting to heat up. And I like to ask the question, why? Why this process? Why do this to us? Why heat up our environment to the point where now we have to make major adjustments in order to survive in the future? Well, because there's a planned protocol. I like to call it a plan. If you don't look at it like a plan, it's hard to understand. So up till now, evolution has brought super intelligence into the plane. We've evolved into a super intelligent human beings. So we know that that's kind of what it's about. I like to call it conscious growth. But let's just stick with the human brain. It evolved to this point. We're super intelligent. And that has been a plan and a design. And you could tell it's a plan because the sun is going to overheat the Earth and we're going to have to do something about that. That is kind of the reason for everything. So why, and how do we know this? Well, every star in the galactic environment that we see is going to explode. In fact, one explodes every 60 seconds that we can see. There's probably more that explode that we do not see. So let's just say a star explodes every second in the universe. Our sun is going to do that too. It's scheduled to do that. So I always like to try and answer the why questions. Well, why this system? Why generate all this beauty and wonderness and being a human and having all these expressions and the adaptations? Why are we doing all this? Because it's obvious that if our sun is going to overheat the planet, then the scheduled plan is for us to find a way to survive that. And to survive that, you would have to leave one day. One day we will be leaving this planet to survive it. And that is a plan. We know because it's happening all over the place. And this is the big picture of evolution. So to kind of put a cap on the human evolving, what's it going to take for a human to leave the planet? Well, it's going to take, you know, a couple million years, that's for sure. And that's if we don't have any of the other elements, galactic or biological, that can end or push us into space sooner. Hopefully we have thermo time window to develop the technologies to leave comfortably. So from you and I today, to that individual that is going to leave Earth with all of the story of Earth, right? How is our physiological existence going to evolve and adapt to those conditions? Because right now, a human being can only last about 2 years in space. Then you start to become a blob. This is what astronauts have actually said. You start to become just a blob of, flesh and blood. So how do we design a human being? Because that's what it's asking us to do. Design a human being, take a hold of evolution ourselves and manipulate the genes and develop something that will be able to survive in the spaceship for longer than 2 years. Even that's difficult. And really the goal is eternity. You have to develop this human being to live eternally, because if it doesn't and it eventually dies in that spaceship, then what's the use, right? So,
yeah,
that's how I see evolution.
Certainly, certainly, Mr. Mark. Well, we agree with you. So to wrap up our discussion for today, what is your final thought about evolution in the big picture?
Yes, the big picture is that there is a design to this, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I'm not supposed to use that word in science, but it's just very apparent to me that the evolution of intelligence is a forced constraint, that we are forced to become smarter by the birth and the death of our own planet, Earth.
Well said, Mr. Mark. Well, looking forward for that death and the rebirth of our sun. I hope sooner or later we go beyond our solar system or go beyond our universe. Or Milky Way galaxy itself.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Mark, would you like to plug in something?
No, I've got a book out called Fungus Theory of Conscious Growth. It's a cover right here. It's available on Amazon. I have a website, marklchristensen.com, where it does shows and explains a lot of this theory. And I'm in the middle of presenting science papers to science journals, and going to do a video campaign coming up.
A video campaign. Looking forward for those, Mr. Mark, and let's talk about it for the next episode. And I think we will talk about biology itself next week.
Love it. Now,
tune in. Yes, tune in, people. Fungus Theory again with Mr. Mark. Please do support him, because who knows who will be a Nobel Peace Prize for this projects. More projects to come. So, yes, Mr. Mark, thank you so much for your time.
Daniel, thank you too. We'll see you next time.
What up, people? See you soon.